Tom, I would defer to you. Do you have any opening statement here for tonight?
Before I say anything, I'd like to say something.
Sure.
No, opening statements. I guess, well, I'm probably not the most savvy guy sports-wise, but it's a pleasure to be here. I will say I know a little something about character or something about a little character. So I'd like to say I'm happy to be back in Cleveland. I grew up here, and as far as character goes, Cleveland has one of the greatest characters of any city I've ever been in.
They really do.
Yeah, it does. It's a tribute, and it's a tribute to the people who live here and the people who work here, and it's an indomitable spirit.
Remember the whole Cleveland's a plum campaign? I think it was that in the 80s. They've really grasped to try to get the point across, haven't they?
Well, everybody's searching for their true character at some point, yes. I suppose. But that really comes out in tough times and times of crisis, whether it's through sports or anything else.
Now, we're still looking, I guess, for a way to get Cleveland's across. But, yeah, hopefully it'll happen here at some point. But, yeah, we were really looking forward to having you on the program here tonight. There's so much to be able to get to. I want to point out to everybody, too, we talked about this last week on the show. We referenced your ballot. Of course, this being the show where nothing is off topic, we had our second annual FDH Lounge Pantheon last week. We were honored to have you as one of 26 people casting ballots for the best of the best in many different categories here. I never expected when we put this together that any of our guests would have even a distant relation to any of the categories, and any of our voters, I should say, because this was just really, really, really weird. I didn't even catch it immediately. My co-host last week, Dave Adams, pointed out to me, your vote in the category for best Seinfeld episode was the one where Elaine was accused of, I don't know, plagiarizing a Ziggy comic strip or whatever, but when that hit me, I was just like, damn, I can't believe this. That had to be pretty funny to you to see that listed as a category and have the chance to vote on that, and B, that how weird was that back in the day, late 90s, when that was on there, to see Ziggy referenced on that iconic show?
It totally caught me by surprise, Rick. We usually, if somebody wants to use Ziggy in a TV show or something, they call and ask permission, and then they say, here's what we're going to say. Do you okay that? This just showed up. I came into work, and everybody's going, wow, how did you do that? How did you get on Seinfeld? And it's like, what the hell are you talking about here? And so I finally saw it, and I said, I voted best episode because it was not just because Ziggy. It was one of the funniest episodes of Seinfeld I've ever seen.
It was. But, you would never have to apologize on this show for voting for it for self-promotional purposes because we're all about that. I said a couple weeks ago, we had a gentleman named Adam Buckman on the show who was also one of our voters last week, longtime TV writer for the New York Post, now writes for TV Week online. He, on his blog, has the billing on there, the greatest TV writer in the world. And the first thing I said to him is, we're going to get along really well with you. So, you don't have to apologize for voting for it for self-promotional purposes. I have to say, we're probably going to be spoiled having you in here tonight, Tom, because on this show, Our booker, Steve Cervillo, the New York Bureau, who got you booked for us, and I can't thank him enough for that, he has a nasty habit with these guests of starting at the top with these industries, and then we're kind of like ruined. First game show host, Bob Barker. Where do we go from there? First mascots that we ever had, the San Diego Chicken and the Philly Fanatic. I'm sorry, who else are we ever going to want after that? First cartoonists, Al Jaffe and Tom Wilson. First in-studio guest, Tom Wilson. Where do we go from here?
It's only downhill from here. we're talking cartoons, though. So.
It's just, I hate to be rude to any future guests, but I'm supposed to get worked up about a rock band drummer or somebody. We had Tom Wilson in studio here tonight. It's all going to be downhill from here. But I guess it's a nice problem for us to have.
How often does a guy get to come back to his hometown and talk about something that he grew up with here?
And that is really something, too. There's so much that I want to talk about with your book. I'm intrigued by the structure of it, the whole journey structure of it that you came up with. One of the things I want to ask you, you've mentioned Cleveland a few times here tonight, and I'm going to ask a question that probably has an obvious answer to it, but for the sake of people who live outside the Cleveland area, and we have a decent chunk of the audience that does, they may not get this immediately until you explain it. You talk about in the book with Ziggy's nose, and you talk about the whole part there as it's coming right up against the face there, the dead man's curve. on Ziggy's nose, and you said that was come up with by the the American Greetings folks came up with that. I think those of us who are from Cleveland would assume that that stretch of highway about a mile and a half from here is where they got that from. I'm assuming that's the case?
Well, yeah, literally and figuratively. Okay. I tried to run a lot of different things from growing up here. But no, I will just to clarify, Dead Man's Curve is there's a lot about the art of cartooning and growing up here too, and all of my heroes. But as far as the Ziggy Dead Man's Curve goes, that's just we were with American Greetings for a lot of years. We're back with them for a whole new card line now, another Cleveland institution, mm-hmm. longstanding. And the artists there, when they were doing the Ziggy cards, said there's a, you know, even their best artists had trouble with this one little spot on Ziggy's nose. And if you hit it dead on, you got Ziggy. If you miss it, you don't. And Ziggy's a simple guy, but a lot tougher when you get down into the little details, kind of like life.
Well, that's very interesting that you mention that as far as how difficult that is, because one of the things I wanted to ask you about tonight concerned the matter of genetics and you actually being able to do the comic strip, not just aspire to it, but to do it. And I know, like, from a personal point of view, I inherited a lot of things from both of my parents, and I would hope to say a lot of, I think, great qualities from both of them. But professionally, all from my mom. The stuff that my dad is great at, and my dad is great at a lot of stuff, I can't do any of it. If I wanted to be like him in that way, I couldn't. I'm just like my mom creatively in a lot of ways, but my dad, forget it. For you, part of the book, and it seems to culminate in this sort of spiritual awareness later in the book, but it seems like you had at least some of that in you all along. Did you have any sense all along as far as destiny or anything like that? You could have aspired to do that, but unless you had the God-given ability to take over for your dad in this role, you would have been nowhere.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with, and our choices have to do with inspiration and the things that inspire passion in us. I was fortunate in that my father, who, you know, again, started American Greetings, spent most of his life here, developed some wonderful characters. He was my superhero, basically, and a very inspiring man. So I grew up with Ziggy, taking over Ziggy about 27, 28 years ago. I had the benefit, I don't know about genetics playing a role here, mm-hmm. but I would say having an inspirational father, seeing how passionate he was about this, and essentially having a very successful little brother that I grew up with, made it very easy for me to find a way to maybe be Ziggy's spokesperson for a while and bring him to life for other people. It just seemed like a very natural transition for me.
In something like that, yeah, maybe it's maybe not something as formal as a skill set. Is it in many ways, the way you seem to be describing it, as an intuitive thing? You were able to basically feel the Ziggy character and it kind of came out that way?
I grew up with artists. My mom and dad are both artists, painters. Okay. I mean, art was everywhere in our house. I was drawn on the back of dry cleaning cardboard shirt backers as soon as I could draw. I was the kid in school who never paid attention and was doodling, and that's where I came from. So art was a natural place for me. I love advertising. I love licensing, but I love character development. And I don't know. I don't know how something like that could be in your genes, but I think it was definitely in my life, and I drew from that. And as a result, draw Ziggy from what I drew from.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's an amazing story being able to take over and to keep it seamlessly in the family like that. It's really interesting. In your memoir, the reader gets a great feel, really, for how your mind works, for how you develop concepts. I have to say, and there are a number of things in this book I think that we can all relate to. Some of us more so than others. Not everybody can relate to this next question I'm going to ask you the way that I can, and that is driving I-71 between Cleveland and Cincinnati. I've done that, not nearly as much as you have, obviously, and I haven't been to Cincinnati that many times in my life, but I've been as far as Columbus a lot of times, so I've made that part of it, in Columbus to Cincinnati, to an extent as well. Coming up with that as sort of a backbone for the book, sort of like a theme for a journey, making that route on there. How did that sort of germinate and develop in your head?
Well, I wish I could say it was just a great idea that popped into my head, but the fact is, this book sort of led the development of it through that. And I realized that being an Ohio boy altogether, I live in Cincinnati, I have an office here, I grew up in Cleveland, I'm making this journey back and forth, and it's my past is here. I have an office here, so my present is here, but my present and my family is down in Cincinnati. So that path really was an outline for my life and all of the things that I value relationship-wise and everything else. The book, Zigzagging Through HCI, is a very raw and it's almost like something I can't, when people read it and they say, I can't believe you're saying these things or telling people these things, because it doesn't exactly show me in the best light. It shows me going through hardship and not knowing a lot of things. So, but I couldn't tell it in the way that it was told, and it couldn't unfold in the way that it did unless it was real and very raw. And so the book led itself. It kind of created itself as it went.
Well, I respect that. And I think anybody that reads the book will as well. And you know, it's I know it's not the easiest thing to do to share some of these things here, but I want to be able to help all of our listeners and our viewers to be able to get these experiences. So I'm going to try to relate to some of these concepts directly with you here. One thing that my family has in common with your family, for example, my mom got breast cancer. She passed away a couple of years after your wife did. In the case of my mom, it was very suddenly. We were all very close to her. She seems like a very similar type of person to your wife, which I think would probably be a great compliment to both of them to say that. So there's a lot of things, and maybe there's some other people out in the audience that have similar experiences that can kind of relate in that way. The one thing I can relate to, and I'd like to have you elaborate on this a little bit here too, because I don't think I'd ever seen anybody reference this before. One of the hardest things when you go through a period of extreme loss like this is not to feel like yourself. You seem to be somebody with a very strong sense of self. I am, and maybe creative people feel that more than other people. I don't know. I don't know if that's a commonality or if it's basic human nature, but when you don't feel like yourself, talk about that. The destabilization of something like that is just devastating, and it's something a lot of people don't even think about.
Well, you know, yeah, well said, I have to say. You know, we go through life making plans and really setting our own path in life, and when something big happens in our life, and whether it's the loss of somebody or some unpredicted bump in the road, we can get lost. We can get taken off on a detour, and we're totally unprepared, and we do feel lost. And that's when, you know, I like to think it's sometimes we have to get lost in order to find ourselves sometimes, because we realize that we aren't always in control of things, even though we'd like to be. This book is, as I said, formed itself. It's about relationships. It's about a life journey. And there's a lot of very raw stuff, as I said, but it's about loss, but it's about creation, too. You know, Picasso had said once that every act of creation comes out of an act of destruction. Mm-hmm. And I found that to be true in art as well as life. And this book is a reflection of that. It's unlike anything that I've ever written before. I don't even know if I could write something like this again, because it came out of journaling through some of the most difficult times of my life. But it ends up being very inspiring to people who read it, and for that I'm grateful. I had no idea that it would have that effect.
It is. And I think people who read it are grateful to you, and I think they appreciate that you've been able to channel your pain and your experiences to try to help other people out. I think that's a very noble thing to do. I'd like to explore that a little bit more here too, because there was something else, and again, this may be more of a universal experience than a lot of people even think about, because it doesn't come up a lot of times in day-to-day conversation. The part of the book that grabbed me the most, and I was warned by our producer Steve that there were going to be parts of this that were going to make me emotional, and there were. The one that probably grabbed me the most was, this was set in the time after your wife's passing, coming onto the scene, your new female friend Lois had the experience with your kids where things didn't go well. She said some kind of disparaging things to you about them in frustration, I guess heat of the moment from the way that I read it here. The experience of her then being awakened that night by what could only been the vision of your late wife as a small child in that form, and basically setting her straight on this stuff and being angry and direct with her on that. I have to tell you, my family, both before my mom passed and after the time my mom passed, we experienced some things that could only be deemed as supernatural. My father, in the final days with my mom, which was at the hospice there, we had an old family friend, a priest, who came there. And my dad asked him, told him a story, does this make sense to you? Yeah, the guy starts rattling off something that happened to him at age 16 when he had a near-death experience and was visited by somebody. This is very, very powerful stuff, and it seems to me, and you don't set out to proselytize in the book overtly or anything like that, but it seems to me, it makes the point that the burden of proof, I think, a lot of people, times people want to put the burden of proof on believers. I think it shows the burden of proof is on non-believers, because you have to rationalize away so much of this if you're to be a non-believer, if you're to say that this is all, you know, a bunch of BS, because you could explain away your story, but what about one of my stories? What about my dad's story? I think that your example just encapsulates this perfectly.
Well, boy, that's, again, well said. I mean, you know, truth sometimes is very much stranger than fiction. It goes back to what I say. When we're in our comfort zones and everything is planned and expected, you know, it's those unexpected things that can really change our lives and affect us the most. When you're lost, when you're in a depressed state, and I will admit, I was, through this period, I was in a state of depression. It affected me greatly, and I lost my place and who I was and where I was and everything else. But the funny thing that happens through contrast is you start to pay attention to things that you don't pay attention to normally, and you start to see things that you would normally just totally pass by. Your awareness is enhanced. It's kind of like you know, when you get the adrenaline flowing, you know, when you're scared or lost, I mean, that's when your awareness is at its height, and you start to see connections in life that you normally wouldn't see. Everything I put in this book is true. Everything that I relate to is true. And sometimes when I look back on it, it's like, I went through that. I mean, is this real? But I know it is, because it all comes out of journaling in real time. That's what I mean by being very raw. These experiences we all have. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of things that once we get out of the place where we're so comfortable and we know everything and we can decide how everything's going to go, we have to admit we really don't know a lot of things. And sometimes, again, being lost, going down that detour on life's highway, whether it's from Cleveland to Cincinnati or whether it's traveling through life, can take us to places, and we realize that life is a bunch of detours. It's a series of detours, and that's the real journey. We don't have control most of the time.
And that sounds like it was one of the harder things for you to relate in this here. It was surrendering that sense of control, which, again, in your defense, two young boys that you had at that period of time, you know, you've got to be the responsible adult. You've got to be the person holding it together. So you had valid excuses for that. But it sounds as though that was maybe the most difficult part of this for you, was surrendering the sense that you were going to have 100% control of how to get through this.
Well, look, I had a great marriage to a wonderful woman, and we have two sons, and they were young at the time. My wife battled cancer for close to 7 years through bone marrow transplants and everything else. I found myself in a position as a single dad trying to not just raise two kids, but to get them over something that no child should ever have to go through, and I didn't have a clue what to do. I was completely lost, and meanwhile I've got a business to run, I've got a job to do, I've got deadlines, and then I've got to every day be funny and come up with something that's going to make somebody smile, when generally I feel like I just don't want to get up in the morning or go on anymore. But it's a result of having to deal with those things that you come to some realizations that take you to a completely different place. I wish that there was a book like this available for me then, because I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what was. I thought I was going nuts. I thought I was alone in the world. Anybody who's read this afterwards has come back, and the reviews have been consistently wonderful. But the best thing that I hear, in addition to some of the more stranger than life types of things that happen, is I realize, you know, when I went through a similar situation, that things that I'm going through are natural. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing out there for us to say, this is okay. It's okay to be lost once in a while. It's okay to say you don't know what you're doing or where you're going. I realize one of the reasons Ziggy is such a predominant character in this is because he does that every day. Ziggy shows up, life throws everything at him, and he keeps coming back over and over again, getting through whatever life has for him. And I found I had to draw from that strength of that character within me to get through a lot of these things. And in a way, Ziggy helped create me when I was pretty much torn down to my basic foundations at a rough time.
Well, there are a lot of people I know that will benefit from this book. You can count me as among the people I don't know that I could have gotten through what I went through, you know, completely at the time. I could have bypassed the pain, but certainly it would have helped to have had it. So I know it can help other people to be able to read this book. I got an IM here from our producer, Steve, who said, I lost my mom this year and my dad back in 2001. Reading Tom's book was very therapeutic for me, and I wanted to thank him publicly for writing it. You feel good, yeah, to get that kind of an outpouring.
Well, I hear that so much, and I had no plan for this book either. Mm-hmm. It came out of on its own, and it brought all of the relationships and the heroes and the tragedy and all the wonderful things that I've known. They all came flooding out. But I realized everybody finds something meaningful to them, as you mentioned or as Steve mentions. There's an empathy there. Ziggy's a communicator, too. A great communicator, and he's there through the tough times and the great times for people, whether it's greeting cards. But the fact is, life is made up of those things too. We can all find something in a tragedy. There's always something to keep you going on and something positive at some point to take away from it. It's just sometimes it's as something as little as knowing you're just not alone.
Well, that in and of itself is very powerful, yeah, because feeling alone, feeling, as we said earlier, you know, destabilized, you know, these are things that I think are going to be very difficult for people to be able to get through without the aid of something like this. I know that is something that people can people feel. That sense of almost kind of alienation in a sense, really, and that's I think what you were feeling to an extent as well, correct?
Well, yeah, when you and not just alien, when you lose your sense of self, when you feel like you're not who you are, things aren't the way you are, you go back inside yourself and you go back to your character, the superheroes, the relationships, you find things that have been growing inside you and developing as a result of, for example, my father. My wife, my heroes, my cartoon heroes, the character I create. And you realize that they've created a lot of strengths in us that in tough times we can draw upon. And that's another lesson in this, at least it was to me when I got through this. I realized that there's strengths and there are characters inside of us that we develop as a result of people we know, relationships we have, superhero characters, cartoon characters even, things that we empathize with and identify with that are always there to help us when we need them. And it's a resource that not many of us are aware of until there's nothing left that we used to count on. And then we can turn to them. And that's what I did.
And this is what's great. You're getting people to think about these kinds of things. I know I have some more questions. We will get to this here shortly as far as developing some of the further questions in this.